Hello, and welcome to your Mountain Valley Mountain guided tour of Land's End. My name is Jillian Dykeman, and today I'll be your guide. I've been touring, guiding, and facilitating encounters with the landscape for a long time. When I was a little girl, I didn't play with Barbies inside. Instead, I wandered around the woods and my parents' backyard, turning over rocks, looking for bugs and beetles and toads, and playing primarily outside. I was always encountering the landscape. Today, and together, we will encounter the landscape and hopefully ourselves in the process. At this point in the tour, you should still be in the lobby of the Logan Center. If you've already entered the gallery, I'll invite you to go back into the lobby. And I want you to find the painting hung up on the wall behind the front desk. This is a work by the artist Karis Adams. It looks abstract. So how do we encounter this work? It looks like four triangles facing the middle of the canvas. How do we access this piece of art? Well, we know it's part of a landscape show. So how might this painting be a part of a landscape? Maybe you're just visiting Chicago. Maybe you live here. Either way, the image might seem familiar. It might even look like the markings you see on condemned buildings. All right, I'll invite you to walk inside the gallery now. Walk inside the gallery and turn to your left to go in the small room with the large photograph. This is a large photograph by artist Hans Hacke. What do we see here? We see a landscape, and it's cut with this fence. How does this fence function in the work? Does it separate us from the landscape? We are cut off from it by this fence. Or maybe it is cut off from us by the fence. In his essay on the importance of natural disasters, land artist Walter de Maria said, "Put the best object you know next to the Grand Canyon, Niagara Falls, Redwoods. The big things always win." This is a very large landscape photograph. Big things feel even bigger in a small space, so it makes sense that this is in the smaller gallery. It makes it feel bigger. And similarly, small things feel smaller in a big space. For instance, just last week, I unfurled my yoga mat in a large room, And I stepped back and I looked at it, and it looked small in the large room. And knowing that my body is smaller than the yoga mat, and I know this because I fit, my whole body fits on the yoga mat. And knowing that the yoga mat looks small in this large space, I thought, wow, I'm a tiny human. I'm just a small person in this big world. Next, I'd like to direct you out of the room with the Hans Hacke photograph and step into the larger gallery space and take your immediate left and then look to your right to the TV monitor with the trees and make sure you're standing close enough to hear the sound coming from the monitor. The sound will be very important for understanding this artwork. Artist Eric Watts filmed these trees, and then he took that footage and put it on an infinite loop. These trees become infinite in this piece. They are eternal, an eternal forest on a loop. Now I need to ask you something personal. Have you touched a tree today? Have you touched a tree this week? Have you touched a tree this month? There's a very strong possibility that before coming here today and putting on these headphones and pressing play, you used the bathroom, or you picked up a newspaper. And if you're doing this right, you are definitely standing here on the floor of the gallery. So when did the trees used to make your toilet paper or your newspaper cease to be trees? When did the white oaks that these floorboards are made from stop being trees? It really changes the way you perceive this artwork when you think about your very regular interaction with trees. Perhaps Eric Watts was thinking about this when he filmed it. Perhaps he mic'd the trees so that he could pick up the sound that they made, which was at too high a frequency for human hearing. And perhaps through the use of technology, he changed the frequency so that we could hear it, so that we could hear the trees. Are they screaming? Are they singing? I'll invite you to walk further into the gallery, keeping to the left. Next, we're looking at a piece of artwork by Dan Peterman. This work is made of 5 distinctive landscapes. These, I imagine, are seascapes. Take a moment to be quiet with this one. Furthest to your left, it seems that it's a seascape with a view that is zoomed in. It's more realistic for the way we experience looking at landscape. Just for instance, this morning when I looked out my window, I could see dozens of buildings, but I could only really look at one of them at a time. Dan Peterman is bringing this idea to our attention. I grew up near the ocean. I wrote a lot of poems about the ocean. I think I can remember one for you. It started like this. One day, by the bay, I sailed away. They were mostly along that kind of theme. The ocean gives me that yoga mat feeling I spoke about with the Hans Hacke photograph. And it's funny because these pieces of art might be made of yoga mats. Our bodies are salty like the ocean. Our breathing is like waves. Do you know what the gyre is? The gyre is a floating island of plastic, the size of Texas, in the Pacific Ocean. The plastic constituting the gyre gets broken down by the sun and it becomes smaller and smaller, but at every stage it is still plastic. I wonder if one day we too will have gyres of plastic floating in our bodies. So I'd like to turn your attention to the Susan Hiller piece. It should be number 6 on your map. It's in the center of the large wall, which if you turn around 180 degrees from the Dan Peterman piece, it should be to your right. Please walk up to this piece now. You should have a close look. You'll see the same building over and over again. They look like postcards for a place called Land's End. It seems Susan Hiller is also trying to encounter Land's End. She's trying to access something with these houses. You're probably familiar with the idea that repeating something diminishes it. That idea that nothing golden stays. This idea is at the heart of angst. Let's try something. Feel free to repeat after me. But if you're feeling conspicuous, you can just listen closely. Let's try repeating the same word over and over again. Let's take the word bulb. You probably picture a light bulb, maybe a tulip bulb. Anyway, just listen. Or speak with me. Bulb. 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 After a while, the word becomes ridiculous. It starts to lose its meaning and it becomes more and more challenging to correlate the word with whatever object you initially pictured. Does it diminish? When I was younger, I moved into the mountains with my boyfriend, Brad. And Brad and I had never been through the mountains before. And we took a Greyhound bus, and it was the summer, and there were some clouds in the sky, but a lot of blue sky, and the sun was shining, and it was shining on the mountains, and they were magnificent. They were so big. They were so old. And it was early days in our relationship. and we worked there for a while, and then we moved back to where we're from, and we thought we'd do it again. We thought we'd go live in the mountains again, and maybe it was reflective of our relationship and the direction it had gone in, but I remember anticipating that feeling of the magnificence, because we took the very same route with the Greyhound bus, but it was gray. It was earlier in the spring, and it was gray, and the mountains looked flat, and it really wasn't the same. I'd like to challenge this idea of things diminishing with repetition, just as Susan Hiller has challenged that idea in this piece. Land's End, Land's End, Land's End, Land's End, Land's End, Land's End. If you say it enough times, yes, it becomes ridiculous. But you start to notice the variations. Just as in Hiller's piece, you notice the distinctive nature of these images. And perhaps she has, in accumulating all the differences, assembled a new encounter. We must never lose sight of the specific in the face of apparent banality. At this point, I'd like to draw your attention to the thing that's probably been grabbing your attention this whole time, and that would be these canary cages. These bird cages were assembled here by Claire Pentecost. This sculpture, this art, I want you to approach it, and I want you to choose a cage. It doesn't matter why, just go to the one that draws you in the most. Choose it, and please approach it as closely as you feel comfortable. Now, spend a moment with it. When you chose a cage, did you choose it because it seemed cozy? Did you choose the cutest one? When you're looking at it, do you picture yourself inside the cage? Do you think about that? Or do you picture yourself in your own body looking in? What do you think this says about you? I'd like to draw your attention to the small work at the back of this room on the opposite wall from the Dan Peterman piece. The two small paintings, one above the other. Please approach them. Now, in these works, there's one below and one above. And the one below is of a forest fire. And the one above has figures in the foreground and an avalanche in the background. And these are beautiful works of art. I feel like this artist is my best friend. I feel like this artist really knows me when I look at these works. What would it feel like to be a mountain? What would it feel like to be an avalanche? Not to be inside of an avalanche, but to be the avalanche. I think that Burwash is approaching this idea. I think this figure repeated is feeling what it's like to be an avalanche. Can you inscribe a friendship on a landscape? Say between this figure and her avalanche? Can you inscribe a friendship on a landscape? Weren't Mason and Dixon best friends? And now I'd like to turn your attention to the large painting at the back of the gallery. The very large, colorful painting. The artist has rendered the true colors of nature in this work. The artist has somehow made a painting that looks like what I feel like inside my body. I feel giant and colorful. I feel joyous. And looking at this is like looking in the mirror. How does it make you feel? Is this like a large mirror for you? How do you feel about it? Spend some time with this piece. Please press pause if you need a little bit more time. Now I want you to turn around and go into the next section of the gallery, past the bird cages. And when you walk into the next section, I want you to turn to your immediate right. We're going to look at Carrie Schneider's photographs. There are two. Take a moment with them. Take a moment with each of them. Is it the same image repeated? Carrie Schneider is a very lucky photographer. She has found two separate house fires and documented both of them. This is just the kind of thing you need to do if you're going to get hired for National Geographic magazine. You need to be the person that finds the things and is there at the right time and is brave enough to take the photograph. Schneider is a fan of the Talking Heads. Watch out. You might get what you are after. Burning down the house. Now I'd like to turn your attention to the work in the middle of the room. I want you to go and stand in front of the large black painting. Stand in front of the large black painting, and I know what you will feel is the presence of the landscape. You will know this. We can sense the hidden landscape. We've got something happening again, like with the Hans Hacke fence. Are we hidden from the landscape, or is it hidden from us? And then when you look at the monitors, you have to wonder, who is this child? Oliver Lutz is playing an elaborate game of hide and seek. Perhaps he is a seeker. He needs this mediation to access his childhood. Do we all need mediation to to access our childhoods. When I was a kid, I played in the woods, as I explained at the beginning of this tour. I wanted to disappear into the landscape. I would build lean-tos and cover them with moss and rush to see them in the morning to see if some magnificent animal had chosen it for its home. I always hoped that they would. On the next wall, we've got a large cave. This is a work by Teresa Gans. This cave, look closely at it. I want to be inside of it. I want to feel inside this cave. Maybe we're already inside of it, and what we're experiencing is a large mise en abîme, an infinite regress, much like the effect of putting a mirror up to another mirror and offsetting it just a little bit. Maybe what Gans is offering us is the idea that there is no nature, that this is it, that we are in it already. All right. Press pause in just a moment. Put on your very warm, sensible clothes. You might want to grab a hot tea from the cafeteria and then exit through the door at the back of the lobby of the Logan Center onto the courtyard, and you can press play again after that. I'll be back with you in just a moment. Now I want you to walk straight out the door at the back of the Logan Center lobby and into the middle of the courtyard. Turn so that you're facing the lights and the trees. This is east. Now I want you to face south. If you're standing in the middle of the courtyard, perfect. Now look at your reflection. And you'll notice that if you lift a limb, your arm or your leg, and move to one side or the other, that your reflection is offset just a little bit. Does this remind you of any of the artwork we were just looking at? Now take your reflection and line it up so that it's no longer offset to your best ability. So here you are three times. There's a version of you that's a little further back and one a little further forward in the reflection because the glass of the window is double paned. And then there's you. There's you right here. All right. Walk up to your reflection and turn to the east again and take the pathway to the road. If it's very cold, you might desire to walk more briskly. It's an important skill for encountering the landscape to know how to keep your body warm. Personally, I travel with an emergency blanket. It's a piece of space-age plastic metal, and in an emergency, it could save your life. And it only costs $2.99. Seems like a no-brainer to me. All right, hopefully you've reached the road, or rather the sidewalk next to the road. I want you to turn to the south, which will be on your right. Walk down the sidewalk. Again, perhaps briskly. Past a line of bushes. Keep walking. Keep walking. Keep walking. All right, when you reach the clearing on your right, I want you to stop and turn and face it. Here we are encountering the landscape again. There are trees and they're planted perhaps a bit haphazardly. Somebody, when they planted these trees, decided not to put them in a neat little row, but rather throughout the field. It is winter, and the trees look like they could be dead. But they're not dead. They're sleeping. A lot of us are like these trees. We're alive, but we're sleeping. And maybe, like the trees in the spring, we can wake up and we can find ourselves in the landscape. All right, now turn around. So you're facing north. And I want you to walk up the sidewalk. I want you to walk up the sidewalk toward the Midway Plaisance, the park in front of the university. Just keep walking toward it, and we're going to walk past some very interesting buildings. Keep walking. Again, if you walk briskly, it will generate body heat. If you find you simply can't generate enough body heat, you'll have to borrow some from somebody else. Now keep walking. Keep walking. There are some beautiful large trees on your right. And if you look up, you might see that they're full of crows. Or you might see a squirrel leaping between them. I wonder what these animals mean. There's a lot of meaning in the landscape. Keep walking. I have often walked down this street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. And now there's snow beneath them. All at once am I several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live. Are there lilacs in the heart of town? Can you hear a lark in any other part of town? Now to your immediate left is a brick building. You can stop when you reach the burnt orange doorway. Does enchantment pour out of every door? No, it's just on the street where you live. This is the Laredo Taft Midway Studio building. There are artist studios inside, and there might even be artists inside right now. Laredo Taft converted a barn into these studios in 1906. And oh, the towering feeling. Just to know somehow you are near. The overpowering feeling that any second you might suddenly appear. People stop and stare, but they don't bother me. There's nowhere else on earth I would rather be. Let the time go by. I don't care if I can be on the street where you live. Laredo Taft made the sculpture The Fountain of Time, which can be found at the western edge of the Midway Plaisance. These studios were named a National Historic Landmark in 1965. Now keep walking past the next building. Again, we're heading north. You'll notice some very interesting ornamentation on this building. There are clovers and some motifs that could be four-petaled flowers. And there's wrought iron around the windows at the bottom of the building with what look like spades at the top of them. These symbols are present because the architect had a fondness for playing cards. She might have been a gambler. Now walk up to the corner of the sidewalk. And you can turn west or left. And stop here and have a good look at the Logan Center. The Logan Center was built by Todd Williams and Billy Thiessen. This building is entirely glass with a brick facade. Sections of the brick were removed later on due to pressure and complaints that all of the views from this very tall building were blocked. The bricks were there to protect the building from the wind, but it was determined later on that some could be removed. Now, across the street from you is the Midway Plaisance, and if there isn't any traffic and you decide to, you can cross the road onto the park, and if you decide not to, your tour will be just as good. So just bear with me. The Midway Plaisance was designed by Frederick Olmsted. Olmsted is famous for having designed Rockwood Park in St. John, New Brunswick. The Midway Plaisance is a mile long, and it was built in 1871. Initially, Olmsted envisioned a series of lagoons connecting Washington Park to the west, through the Plaisance to Jackson Park in the east, and eventually Lake Michigan. These lagoons would be for people of leisure. There was a fire in Chicago in 1871, and the plans for the lagoons were burnt in the fire, and the cost to the city for rebuilding after the fire prohibited spending the funds on these lagoons for leisure. If you're standing in the Midway Park, the Midway Plaisance, and you look to the east, you'll see a mound of turf, and this is a recreation of a Viking burial mound. Now, return to the side of the street where the Logan Center is located. Go to the front of the Logan Center and look up at the building, and you will see a banner. And this banner looks like the logo for a metal band. When I was younger, I used to listen to metal music because my boyfriend Brad liked it. Brad and I would go to the guitar store, and for what seemed like hours at a time, he would talk about guitars to the guys working there. He eventually got exactly what he wanted: a PRS with the bird cutouts and mother of pearl inlays. And this was sort of a difficult decision for him because he was vegan and mother of pearl is not. You can go inside now. I'm going to leave you where I found you, which is in the lobby of the Logan Center. I want you to remove your headphones after this and return the Discman so that the next person waiting can use it. And walk around the gallery one more time, and I want you to encounter the landscapes, and I want you to think about what you've learned today, and I want you to go home and before bed tonight make some herbal tea, go to sleep, and when you wake up, write in your dream journal. Write about your dreams, and hopefully, even in your dreams, you have encountered landscapes. Thank you very much.